that sets us free. These then are the questions that have bracketed human and mortal existence from the beginning, bowing us down before the God in whose hand we are held. I invite you to hear in the questions from Scripture your own, and I'm going to tick off just a whole bunch of them. What will you give me, for I continue childless? Why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? Why does your wrath burn hot against your people? Why have you treated your servants so badly? Shall one person sin and you become angry with the whole congregation? If the Lord is with us, then why has this happened to us? Am I to die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? Have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I am staying by killing her son? From Genesis through Kings, people in the thick of human history have asked after the rhyme or the reason hidden in the midst of sorrow and disappointment and grief. Then there are the unrelenting questions of the psalmists. Why do you hide your face? Why do you forget our affliction and oppression? How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long, O Lord, will you look on? Why do you sleep, O Lord? My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me, from the words of my groaning? O God, why do you cast us off forever? Why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? How long, O Lord, is the foe to scoff? Is the enemy to revile your name? Why do you hold back your hand? Why do you keep your hand in your bosom? Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love ceased forever? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? How long and why, says Old Testament professor and friend Patrick Miller, how long and why are the questions at the very heart of the human rage against heaven? When one is in distress and trouble, the questions always come roaring to the forefront of the mind and heart. The questions are why? secular answers have recently been given in Tampa and Charlotte. Self-reliance, perseverance, hard work, though the deck be stacked against you on the right hand. Common effort, shared responsibility, mutual forbearance, but the road is long and hard on the left hand. No doubt Israel had similar answers available to her. Stern overlords and benevolent rulers, whose ordering of the ancient world day by day promised to uphold, govern, sustain, direct all the people. Yet page after page of this story in Scripture invites us into another conversation. A conversation with the inscrutable character in whose hand we are held no less than they. Do not cease to cry to the Lord for us, said the people of Israel to Samuel, that he may save us from the hand of the Philistines. Sometimes the help asked for is help received. The enemy is routed. It is easy for God's people to sing, "Here I raise my Ebenezer, hitherto thy help uncome." By the way, top among the questions asked at the door of the sanctuary, what is an Ebenezer? Many of you pass that, and I forget from the time I preach it like now until the next time you're going to ask it. But the word means stone of help. Stone of help. So Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Jeshana and called its name Ebenezer, for he said, "Hitherto the Lord has helped us." Yet here's Samuel's subtle qualification of the help given the people by God. "Hitherto the Lord has helped us." To this point in the story, God has helped. And therefore, we will remember when trouble next visits us, from whence our help has come. Still, Ebenezer stands as a reminder, not quite around the finger, that there are no guarantees ahead. Samuel knew enough not to take God's help for granted, not to presume from God's hand an easy answer. I think in this regard of the late writer Reynolds Price, who wrote of the whence of his help as a tumor snaked its way up his spine. He wrote, "I'd lie alone in my bed in the dark and sense the presence just to the right of my mind's eye of a patient listener behind a screen. I never asked myself who it was from the gallery of possible hearers. It, he, she, whatever, never spoke a sound, but only heard me out as I worked at discovering my minimal needs and feasible hopes. I never asked it point blank for answers. Not yet, anyhow. Its reliable presence seemed only to say that I had somehow to build my life on radical uncertainty, knowing only that I was heard by something more than the loyal but powerless humans near me." In spite of the prose, it seems to paint a palpable presence and an audible voice, answering as well as hearing the questions dared in ancient Israel. I expect in the moment that these people experienced not much more than what Reynolds Price experienced alone in his bed. But in each case, there was a dogged trust that the one who had been their refuge and strength, their only comfort in life and in death, something more than the loyal but powerless humans near us. Though I am here to tell you this, our questions have been heard by someone more, by the one loyal and to the world powerless human being who has come near to us and in whom the invisible, inaudible God was pleased to dwell. You could say that he is the answer to all of our prayers. And yet, beginning with Matthew's gospel, the vast majority of questions posed about Jesus or to Jesus are questions of those who could not quite get their heads around the sort of help they had been given in him. Matthew's first question is that of scholars searching for truth. Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? What's encountered? The human response to him partakes, I think, of wonder and incredulity. I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me? What sort of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? What have you to do with us, Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time? Are you the one to come? Or should we wait for another? Can this be the Son of David? Where did this man get this wisdom and these deeds of power? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not this his mother called Mary? And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? Are not all his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all this? Look, we have left everything behind and followed you. What then will we have? When he entered Jerusalem, the whole city was in turmoil, asking, who is this? By what authority do you do these things, and who gave you this authority? Is it I? Have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you? And the last, like the first, are you the king of the Jews? From whence does our help come? If it is not the decisive, victorious help we think we need. Our help comes from a loyal and to the world powerless human being who bears our infirmities and weaknesses, who comforts us in sickness, trouble, and sorrow, who provides not for our wants but for our needs, and in whose light we may work at discovering our feasible hopes. To borrow the word of the psalmist, he will not let your foot be moved. He has hold of you. He will help you stand firm along the way, though still you must set out on a way that is rocky and steep and filled with danger. He who keeps you will not slumber. His watchful eye never closes on your troubles or your fears. This is the kind of help that is not evident. Nevertheless, you may live trusting that there is no darkness too dark, nor place too distant, that he has not been. You are not alone. The Lord is your keeper, your shade. He has come between you and all in the world that would harm you. He has taken upon himself the brunt of the heat of the sun and the blows of human infirmities visited upon you according to ancient Israel by the moon. He has done battle with all that would destroy your soul. He has even entered the grave and triumphed over the last enemy, which is death. ready to berate God for not having saved us from drowning. You know how it goes. God will say, but I sent the lifeguard. I threw you the lifeline. I stretched out my hand. I held you close in order to rescue you, and you fought me every step of the way. But from our perspective, we are the Canaanite woman, questioning, pleading, begging, demanding his help. And what follows is silence, maybe a crumb from the table. Lord, help me, we cry again, willing ourselves to believe. Perhaps it will be only as we look back on the long way we have come that we will see as the Israelites saw and say, it was God. It was God.